From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the effort by Utah lawmakers to slow the expansion of Medicaid. Utah voters approved Prop 3 during the election, which would essentially fully expand Medicaid. But since they opened their session 2 weeks ago, some lawmakers have been trying to change the initiative or repeal it altogether, which technically they can do, but voters did have a say on this, so should they? After this.
Have you added a new smart speaker to your home? They're amazing, right? In fact, you can make your Amazon Echo, Google Home, or Apple HomePod even smarter. Ask it to play KUER. Your digital assistant will serve up our live stream filled with the latest news and brain-expanding shows like Marketplace, Radiolab, and All Things Considered. To find out more about how to use your smart speaker, go to KUER.org and click on How to Listen. Or just tell your device to play KUER.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. It usually takes a few weeks of a legislative session for Utah lawmakers to get down to the nitty-gritty on the high-profile bills, but as soon as they began last week, they were feverishly working on a bill that would roll back the expansion of Medicaid coverage passed by Utah voters in Proposition 3. Yesterday, the Senate approved a bill, Senate Bill 96, that reduces the number of people eligible for Medicaid. It also imposes work requirements and enrollment caps on beneficiaries. It also happens to cost a lot more for the state, at least at first. Lawmakers are counting on the federal government to give them a waiver, though that is not assured. According to the bill, if they don't get the waiver, the bill, the law, would be automatically repealed. Lawmakers worry the state cannot afford to expand Medicaid in the way voters intended. As one lawmaker said, a majority of voters cannot overrule the laws of mathematics. So today in the program, we're going to be talking about Medicaid expansion, the idea from Utah voters, and the plan in the works now from Utah lawmakers. We'll also talk about some of the principles involved in all of this. We invite you to join the conversation. You may have your own perspective on all of this. 801-585-WEST is the number to join us, 801-585-9378, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Joining us first on the program is Matt Sloniker. He's executive director of the Utah Health Policy Project. It's a nonprofit healthcare advocacy group. They were part of the efforts to pass Proposition 3 to expand Medicaid. He's joining us here in the studio. And Matt Sloniker, welcome to you. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
I guess before we get into the particulars of the bill proposal as that compares to the ideas passed in Proposition 3, give me your broad sense of the way this process is working right now. Lawmakers working fairly quickly to change, essentially, Proposition 3 as passed by voters. Just give me your sense of that, what you've been seeing so far.
Well, I think it's really quite clear that we're seeing this attempt in a very rushed fashion for a reason. I think, you know, it's taken the public a moment to kind of catch up. And now that they have caught up, we're seeing a very, very strong reaction from the voters. And what we see is repeal. For us, it's clear that this is an attempt to repeal. You mentioned just a moment ago that there is no backup plan, that if the waiver isn't granted, then we're back to square one with no Medicaid expansion. And there's no other word for it than repeal of the will of the people.
Well, didn't one lawmaker say we are back to square one if that doesn't happen? I mean, that was which is interesting because it seems like, well, you're not really back to square one. You have an initiative passed by voters in November.
Well, the issue is they're repealing the initiative in the bill language. So what would happen is come—
So that goes away.
Absolutely, goes away. The difference would be if we get the bridge plan, the plan that sort of gets us to when the waiver might be decided, if we get that, then we're in a position of having tens of thousands of Utahns with coverage but no waiver to back it up. No federal permission to continue that coverage.
So that makes it worse, your perspective.
Absolutely. Are they going to take that benefit away? I just think that the rushed nature of the debate, we haven't thought about some of those contingencies and backup plans.
So I wanted to so they're proposing to expand the to change the expansion from just more than $16,000 a year to more than $12,000 a year, as I understand it, which makes it available to people who are at the poverty level or just below the poverty level, whereas the proposition proposed 138% of what's the difference? I guess is I want to give you a sense, give us a chance to make a difference. I know that you don't think this is the core issue at hand, and I'll give you a chance to express that. But what's the significance of the actual numbers there? If you want to talk about that.
Well, you know, I don't think that's the core issue. I think it really does come down to the waiver. But exchange-based plans, private market insurance, is tougher to navigate than Medicaid, and it doesn't have the benefit package that a lot of people in that 100 to 138% that they need. So I think that's one critical component. But again, for us, it's the feds just haven't approved it. We've gone through waiver after waiver. Other states have asked for 90-10 match, the more generous match, only to federal poverty line and not to that larger number that the proposition took it to. We wanted this as simple as possible. Proposition 3 was written to be a very simple, traditional expansion. Let's let the voters decide. Let's not encumber the proposition with a bunch of bells and whistles.
So you don't think why wouldn't you think the waiver would be forthcoming in an administration like this?
Well, we haven't had any indication that we would get a waiver. And in fact, we have pretty good historical precedent. About this same day last year, I had a number of conversations with legislators about a waiver that was being considered by the Utah legislature at that point. And I was told over and over again that this has already received preliminary approval and we need to pursue this waiver. Well, that waiver was passed out of the legislature. The governor signed it, submitted the waiver, and we still haven't heard back. In fact, a meeting in the White House was reported by the New York Times in July of 2018 indicated that the White House didn't want to support these types of things. And really, I don't know what has changed since then to make us think that we might get it now.
Why wouldn't the White House be inclined to support waivers like this? What's the justification that they're telling state lawmakers and others as to why they're resisting?
Well, I think it comes down to numbers. I think that essentially it costs a lot more money. If you allow one state to do it and have this flexibility, you also have to offer that to other states. And it starts getting very expensive very quickly.
It sets a precedent.
And I think it's important to also note that, you know, there's not an interest in expanding coverage in this administration. There's an interest in trying to do the opposite. We saw that with the repeal attempts of Obamacare. And I think it's just not something they're interested in pursuing.
801-585-WEST is the number to join the conversation. Let's take a call from Ian, who's joining us from Salt Lake City. Ian, welcome to the program.
Hi, Doug. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Yeah, honestly, my comments are something that I think are resonating with a lot of voters, especially my age. As a college student, it seems like Utah voters here are getting a lot of whiplash, you know, with the constant excuses from our state legislature in terms of Proposition 2, now with Medicaid expansion. We're seeing some threats as well for the redistricting commission that we all voted for as well. It just seems like time after time after time, voters say we want something, we give clear guidelines for what it is, and then they just throw it out the window. I don't think that's going to be a long-term solution for state lawmakers, and I think it's going to start wrangling a lot of the stranglehold that the GOP has on the state and start loosening that grip. And you're going to start seeing Utah kind of start leaning a little bit more progressive in successive years and generations. It may not be short-term, but this has impact, and this isn't going to be easily forgotten.
Matt Sloniker, are you seeing the dissatisfaction or the frustration you may be sensing from supporters of this saying this could change in some way the political landscape of the state?
I think it might. We are hearing from voters directly day after day, and I think legislators and the governor are also hearing from voters that this is not just about Medicaid expansion, that if we can't use what's our constitutional right to initiate and vote on ballot initiatives in Utah, practically speaking, because they'll just be repealed in the forthcoming legislature, then do we have a ballot initiative process at all?
Yeah. One of the things that our next guest is actually going to say, and he's mentioned that a ballot initiative process is like a bill. It's not intended to be definitive. It's supposed to fit into a process. Mm-hmm. And because the Constitution is pretty clear, voters can have their say in that process, but so then can lawmakers, and they can do whatever they want with it up to a certain point. How do you respond to that contention?
Absolutely. I think there is a space for the legislature to improve ballot initiatives.
Do you like that idea?
Absolutely. I think what's going on, typically we work in the legislative environment, and this was really outside of our wheelhouse, frankly, to work on this ballot initiative. And what's happening here is not just an attempt to fix Proposition 3. What is going on is an attempt to undermine the spirit of the initiative, setting it up to explore all kinds of things that you outlined at the outset of the program, caps on enrollment, work requirements, trying to seek out a 90-10 match, which has never been granted by administration. And I think
you've called this a conservative wish list.
Right. I really think it's a conservative wish list. Other states have tried these types of things. Frankly, it's a lot of what was in the repeal efforts, federal repeal efforts, repeal and replace of the Affordable Care Act. Attempts there to change Medicaid were really what hinged some of the final vote tally and killed this thing. So I really think that had they not gone beyond the scope of the fiscal issues that they see as the case, there are ways to fix the fiscal issues and to make—
You're just saying it's not this.
Absolutely.
Yes. So to the point that some lawmakers have made, it's not sustainable. With the sales tax increase may not cover all of the costs. I'm not sure if you concede that point, but do you see if there was a bill that just dealt with that did some minor fixing, would you be okay with that?
Absolutely. There's a bill, HB 210.
This is Ray Ward's bill.
Yeah. It really does offer some very reasonable alternatives to undermining the entire intent of Proposition 3. And what we've seen in the fiscal note from that bill is we're safe for many years to come if we do a couple quick things to change Proposition 3.
Is 53% a mandate?
I think so. I think that we rule by majority. That's part of democracy. I think one vote is all we need, more than 50%. And 53% is a pretty good buffer, frankly. We were happy with those results. We'd always polled at around 55 to 60, sometimes low 50s. And we think that this is a margin that represents what Utahns believe and how they want to proceed with Medicaid, to do a full traditional expansion, pay for it, and have it be implemented sometime soon, because people are in need.
One of the contentions you hear, and this is one of the things you'll be up against, our next guest I think is going to make this point, is that voters in Summit County, liberals. Voters in Salt Lake County, liberals. Voters in the West Side, liberals. Mm-hmm. Pushed this thing over the mark, but this does not express the general will of most Utahns in some way. I'm wondering how you respond to that.
I think that's really unfair. Voters in the counties you mentioned, the locations you mentioned, are voters and they're residents of Utah. And two, we won in a majority of House districts and Senate districts. And so the sort of notion that this was something pushed by liberals that don't represent Utah is frankly bogus. It's really been infuriating that legislators are saying that the voters didn't know what they were voting on, or they are doing things that it was a bait and switch or something along that order was said. And I think really that shows a distrust in the voters that voted you into office, frankly. So why discredit voters when they're voting on propositions or initiatives when they're also voting you into office?
To this other contention, I wanted to give you a chance to respond to this, that there really wasn't any organized opposition to it, that it was mostly outside money who was proposing these kinds of initiatives in places like Nevada, places like Idaho, and other places, that this wasn't an idea that came from the grassroots of Utahns. It was an idea that came from these from a big progressive group that was trying to expand Medicaid nationwide. How do you respond to that?
Well, I disagree with that. We had sought out various alternatives to pursue with Medicaid expansion over the last 6 years, explored different options. And yeah, there's a big hurdle to overcome when you sort of start dipping your toe in the water of ballot initiatives. But ballot initiatives in Utah do have a history. Now, maybe it isn't something that we go to very often in the state. But frankly speaking, as I mentioned before, we'd always polled at the exact same result that the ballot initiative passed at, was approved by. And the voters of Utah are pro-Medicaid expansion, and they want to pay for it. Doesn't matter, you know, sort of how that ballot initiative got on the ballot, frankly. I think when the voters decide, that's all irrelevant.
If lawmakers proposed a bill that didn't have work requirements, that didn't have enrollment caps, those kinds of things, but did in fact tweak a bit the eligibility, you know, what some lawmakers are saying is, look, it's not that big of a difference between 138% of the poverty level and 100% of the poverty level. If they just tweaked that, could you see your way to supporting something like that?
It really comes down to a waiver. You know, we have—
What do you mean? What do you mean it comes down to a waiver?
To the federal waiver approval, the federal permission. And if we tweak it so much that we need to go ask the federal government for permission to do that tweak, we're in back into sort of—
So you don't want to rely on the federal government at all?
Absolutely not. Yeah. Absolutely not. I think this is really one of the big ironies of this conversation is— you know, the Utah legislature typically is distrustful of the federal government. I think in many cases they're right. But I think in this case we're putting all of the trust on the federal government and one that hasn't been very predictable, frankly. So I'm not okay with betting on the outcome of a federal approval process and especially with no backup plan. You know, it's not worth betting the lives, the livelihoods, and the financial stability of Utahns when they've decided to expand to just try to see if we can get some tweaks and really things that I feel are on that conservative wish list.
Let me ask you about the work requirement part. I think what a lot of people are saying is the difference between the 138% of the poverty level and the 100% of the poverty level, the people that somehow fit in that section are able-bodied. They can go out and get a job. And so I'm wondering, I want to get your sense of that, your reaction to that, the work requirement in general, and what's wrong with a work requirement from your perspective?
Well, I think that it's very important to remember, and I think the Deseret News ran an editorial in right before the election in November that captured this. And it's as simple as you have to be healthy to work. And statistically speaking, most of the folks in the Medicaid expansion gap are already working. Those that aren't, a big chunk of them are at-home caretakers for parents, spouses, children. And those that aren't working but aren't fitting in those other category, that other category are typically on the precipice of a major health crisis, whether medical or behavioral, and they need care. So Utah Health Policy Project actually helps people directly as well, and we help them find insurance, find primary care physicians. And we see people daily that are in the gap. And what we hear most often is, when is this going to roll out because I want to make an appointment? I need to get back to work. And so this is a back-to-work program, Proposition 3. I think it's clear. We don't need – we shouldn't sort of hinge someone's ability to work on this health – I'm sorry. We shouldn't hinge someone's ability to get health insurance on their ability to work. Health comes first.
Passed the Senate, on its way to the House. Are you counting votes? Do you have a sense of whether or not there's going to be enough support? Now, we should point this out, and I want you to make this clear for listeners. Lawmakers have to pass this by a two-thirds majority to sort of explain how this process works, because I think the politics here are pretty interesting at this point.
Yeah, it is really interesting, and it does play into why this is happening so quick as well. You need actually a two-thirds majority and a signature by the governor for an immediate implementation date. And the reason why they're pursuing that is they want to implement this repeal effort before April 1st, which is the sort of go-live date for Proposition 3.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, that's really one of the reasons why this is rushing so fast. It's unfortunate because what we would have is a situation at that point where Proposition 3 would be dead. The voters, the will of the people, what the voters decided would be frankly dead. And we'd be relying on the same thing we've relied on for many years. And if we don't get federal approval, we're back to square one. And what does that mean? I think we just all have to sit and think about it. I've really been very frustrated by the lack of the legislature addressing that aspect of it. I think that's a very critical thing to remember. And remember also that the state set tax dollars that we sort of voted on to pay for the Medicaid expansion, they would continue. So where does that money go?
We're out of time with you, Matt, but I do want to – there's another issue here being raised by one of the callers that I want to get you to respond to before move on. Chad is joining us in Orem. Chad, welcome.
Hi, Doug. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Go ahead.
So I was responding to the thought that people were saying you can't overrule math, and that seems like it's very ironic where we just ran a surplus, and in the State of the State address, Governor Herbert said he was planning on pushing for tax cuts. So where the voters have said they would raise taxes to pay for this, but they're saying there's a difference, why could they not then respond with the money that's there?
What do you make of that? The tax, there's an irony here. At least some are saying it.
Yeah, I agree with the caller. I think there is an irony in the fact we are in such great financial shape but can't evidently take care of the least among us that are struggling, the folks that are, you know, really trying to make ends meet. And it's up to the state to really help out and assist those that really are on the fringes. They're struggling with behavioral health problems. They're maybe new to this country. It's up to the state to really make it work. And this plan just doesn't do that. This plan is frankly a bridge to nowhere. Even if we get the waiver, we're talking about a major overhaul of Medicaid as we know it if the waiver does come through. And whether that's sustainable, we weren't able to explore that today, but there's very important sustainability concerns with per capita caps.
Matt Sloniker, Executive Director of the Utah Health Policy Project, joined us here in the studio. Thank you very much for joining us.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Ian and Chad, thanks very much for your calls. 801-585-WEST, the number to join us. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'll take a break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER.
KUER is listener-supported public radio, and our most dependable support comes from our nearly 9,000 sustainers, people just like you who make ongoing monthly contributions. Starting at just $5 a month, you can become a sustainer too. Go to KUER.org, click on the donate button, and tell us how you'd like to contribute. Use your credit card or make it even easier with a direct withdrawal from your bank account. Join our growing community of sustainers today at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the effort by Utah lawmakers to slow the expansion of Medicaid. Voters approved Proposition 3 during the election. It would fully expand Medicaid, but since the open session a week ago or so, lawmakers have been trying to change the initiative. Yesterday, the Senate passed a replacement bill. It now is headed to the House. We've been talking about the particulars of the bill in part, but also the principle involved. Dave Owen is joining us now. He's a Republican lobbyist and consultant, represents the Foundation for Government Accountability. He's working with them on Medicaid and their support in trying to revise Proposition 3. And Dave, welcome back. I haven't seen you in a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Thanks for joining us.
Old home day.
Okay, I guess I wanted to begin here, and I'm going to back into this just a minute. Donald Trump, do you think he had a mandate to to lead?
Oh, well, mandate's a big word. Obviously, it was a split decision.
It was a split.
So there are a lot of people who don't support his.
Lost by almost 3 million popular votes, but you still see him as having legitimacy, right?
I do, absolutely.
So why wouldn't...
One of the few people in the world that supports the Electoral College. That's another show.
No, it is another show, but why wouldn't you then say Proposition 3, even though it may have been pushed over the limit, and I'm not sure this is entirely true, by Summit County, by Salt Lake County, by the West Side, why wouldn't that be as legitimate in the same kind of way?
I think I kind of chuckled in the other room. You used some of my best stuff before I got in.
Sorry. <there. laughs>
Thanks a lot. I think because a bill, an initiative is no more nor less than a bill passed by the legislature, it opens it to repeal, to veto, to all kinds of things, including amendment. But here's the fact. I mean, this is one of the things that I haven't done the precinct analysis. I'm not sure I agree with Matt, and I respect Matt, and I respect his group, and I know that their hearts are in the right place. We just see the world very differently.
Yeah.
Prop 3 passed by 69,000 votes statewide. It passed Salt Lake County by just about 94,000 votes. As a result, if you net out Salt Lake County, it loses by 26,000 votes statewide. Now, you can say majority rules and all that kind of stuff, but we just got done talking about Trump's victory. And if you're in one of the outlying counties, if you're one of the legislators from the places where it didn't pass, how obligated do you feel, especially when it's not a constitutional amendment? It's not, you know, it's not that kind of thing. It can be. It is malleable. You can change it. And so those guys are getting a lot of pressure from their people. So, you know, the problem is that the voters were contradictory in what they said. And we've been putting a speech in a town hall by Senator Lincoln Fillmore online on Facebook. It's had, you know, tens of thousands of views at this point, where he says, which one did you mean? Mm-hmm. In essence, the voter said, give us a Mercedes, but then they allocated enough money for a Chevy Impala. So what do? If you're the legislature, honor the will of the voters, as he says, by ignoring the will of the voters. If the voters wanted full expansion, they probably should have funded it.
But is your and the people that you speak for, is their problem with the Medicaid expansion just fiscal? Or is there something
bigger
going
on? No, there's something more, but I almost think it's another show.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Well, like we were talking about work requirement. But this is one of Matt Sloniker's essential points, is that this is not really about money for lawmakers. It's about trying to go down this list, this conservative wish list of things that bother them ideologically about expanding Medicaid in the first place, that it's not about money.
Well, that's about, part of it is, but right now a lot of it's about money, Doug,
really?
Because you look 5 years out and you're $70 million underwater. So now what? That's 2%, as Senator Fillmore, I'll credit him, as he said, that's 2% of the WPU. Did the voters vote to suppress education funding in order to fund able-bodied adults with no dependents on Medicaid? I don't think they did. I don't think they understood what they were doing. And the fact is that the Fairness Project, you know, Utah Decides should have been called Dark Money Decides because they spent $3.54 million here in the state. To put that in context, Mitt Romney spent around $5 million. And he had almost unlimited funds. So they were in that league. They were in the league of – and Jenny Wilson only had less than $1 million. These guys had $3.5 million to go out and sell a bill of goods to the people of Utah. If you have enough TV advertising, you know, that's how it works. How many people really sat down, read through it, and thought through it and looked at the out years? They talked about the first 2 years when the program is reasonably solvent. They don't talk about the years after that. They don't talk about the fact that the 32 states – I call them 32 states, 31 – we might be at 32 now, but plus the district – that in overall, they've been 110% over cost estimates. And every state, mind you, when ACA was passed and they were considering whether to expand, all those state health departments sat down. They said, what's our universe of people who could possibly want to enroll in Medicaid? And they came up with a number. And then they said, well, and we were doing this with Healthy Utah, by the way. They were assuming a 60% what I call take rate. So 60% of the people eligible would sign up, which hasn't happened in any of the other jurisdictions. And invariably, where they said it was going to be X, it was X times two in several states. And overall, the number that comes to mind is 110% of projection. Now, some places, like the state of Washington, they got two times what they were estimating, and they viewed that as a victory. They said, oh, great, we're getting health care to even more people than we thought. But that's the orientation of that state. It's just like the Obama administration going out and crowing about the fact that 46 million people were on food stamps, like that was a victory. And you've got to understand that philosophically, I and the group that I represent, we view that as a defeat. If you have to have 46 million people of your people on food stamps, you're doing something wrong.
It seems like you're finding yourself in a kind of an interesting position. I mean, as someone who is supportive of the Count My Vote part and the citizens being engaged in something like that, does it seem a little odd to find yourself in a situation where voters did make an expression, whether you think it's entirely legitimate? I mean, what do you think about the principle involved here, the will of the people, do you find yourself in a strange position?
I wouldn't want to. I mean, I was raised in California. I wouldn't want to live there. the initiative process has badly skewed the politics and the economics of that state. And you can see what's going on there. I do support the right of the people to initiate legislation. However, there were four this year that actually made it to the stage where they had enough signatures. One was Count My Vote, and this is Sesame Street. One of these things is not like the other. Okay? So you had three of them that were – have you read the Colorado Blueprint?
I don't think so.
No, it's a great book. I mean, every Republican ought to read it out there, because it tells the story of how four very wealthy people turned Colorado from pretty red to pretty darn blue. And they did it through the initiative process. This is one of the things they did. And by taking – they were very smart. I tip my hat. I mean, well done, well played. But they were these outside groups who had an initiative or who have an agenda. And that agenda does not comport with my agenda, does not comport typically with the agenda of the people of Utah. And they came in and they spent a bunch of money. And it was marijuana. It was the things that were mentioned earlier, Medicaid, obviously, and then the Better Boundaries thing, which may have a real constitutional problem, by the way, from what I understand. And so you had these outside groups parachuting in and infusing millions of undisclosed donors, millions of dollars from undisclosed donors, and basically purchasing public policy. Now, the irony of that is, the group that I work for, you could turn around and say, well, they're dark money too. And I say, yes, but we're not the ones who sit around and whine about it all day. It's, it tends to be the left that whines about the dark money and the Koch brothers and all that kind of stuff. But credit them, they've been smart enough to turn around and play the game themselves. And that's exactly what's going on. So here's the thing that I view.
I just want to push back on this idea that you've got a bunch of gullible voters who are being imposed upon by these
national
groups.
They're living
groups.
Life. You know that. I've said that for years. There's an uncharitable view of that, and there's a charitable view.
And your charitable view is what? That they're busy taking the kids
to
soccer?
Getting the kids to soccer, making the mortgage payment, worrying about the things that people worry about. They don't sit – I think I used this one time years ago in one of my commentaries. The guy teaching the campaign politics class, and it's a bunch of consultants, wannabe consultants and campaign managers. He says, how many of you consider yourselves normal? And everybody raised their hands because it was Republicans, right? So they're all normal. And then he says, how many of you think about politics for more than 30 seconds a week? And again, all the same hands went up. He goes, I got news for you. You ain't normal.
Okay, I want to ask you, why is it that there – so the bill that's being proposed, do you support the bill that was passed yesterday in the Senate that's on its way to the House?
Yeah, I do, because they're between a rock and a hard place. And I think they really are trying to fulfill the spirit of of the initiative. I know Matt's not going to see it that way, and I get that. I totally understand it.
Well, here's how he doesn't think you're living up to the spirit of the initiative. There's no backup plan, and if in fact you don't get the waiver, which he absolutely does not think you will, then it's done for.
I wanted to be in here when he was saying that, because I will tell you that there are members on the Hill who are very disquieted by that. So I don't know whether that the backup plan is full repeal.
So there are members who are saying,
hey, we got to do better than that. So I don't know exactly how that's going to come out. It may go through as is and then get fixed later. I don't know. I will say this also. I had a couple of – every year we have some legislators to a conference. And this year we had two special advisors from the White House. And not only that, a woman who I had here testifying last year – also went to CMS. You know, she's from the same world. She was the HHS director in Maine, and so they've given very strong signals that reasonable waivers will be granted. There was a sea change, and I don't understand exactly why. What I've been told is they were waiting for the court decision on the individual mandate, and at that point, the Trump administration feels a lot more liberated for whatever reason, and they've given very strong signals. And again, we had two special assistants of the president one afternoon just sitting up there responding to questions and talking to him.
But speaking on behalf of the administration?
Yeah, speaking on behalf of the administration.
But it seems like if ideologically conservatives would be, speaking of being disquieted, troubled by the idea that you grant these waivers to states, you're essentially granting, in effect, expansions to Medicaid. And that seems like what Matt Sloniker and others are saying. The feds are not going to allow that, at least not where they are right now.
I disagree respectfully. I mean, my understanding is they're a lot more open to this kind of thing. They've begun granting, for example, work requirement waivers in Arizona the other day. There are several others that are in process right now. There are some states who want to roll back, and that's a lot harder. We were told very specifically by the policy shop, do not think that you can implement this and then go get the waivers, because you can't. And that won't happen. But if you build it from the ground up and you do what they're doing right now. And my hope, frankly, Doug, on the issue of initiatives is I hope these outside groups look at this and the Prop 2 and they go, you know what? Utah's a bad bet. I don't think we're going to go there anymore. Because they can just turn around and change what we do anyway. And frankly, I'll view that as a positive. The one thing I'll say is count my vote and keep my voice, for that matter, are homegrown. Those are Utah citizens, Utah money. That's our internal affair. These are people that are coming from outside with an agenda that I will never support.
Do you think it was a mistake then not to put some kind of backup plan in this bill?
Oh, I'm not sure that everything's been done on that. We'll have to see.
You still think it's in the works?
But I think it's possible.
Are you counting votes in the House?
I may get punched in the face when I go up there.
I know you're counting votes. Can you get above the two-thirds majority?
What were you guys saying about the two-thirds majority?
Well,
I couldn't hear it.
Okay, so the bill has to pass by two-thirds to keep citizens from passing a referendum to repeal it. I mean, if it has to be passed, signed by the governor, and it has to pass by two-thirds vote. Otherwise, the will of the people comes back into play.
My understanding is right now the whip count's pretty good. 50's the key. 38's easy. There are some people who are going to have to take a tough vote, mainly here in the county, a couple up in Davis County, pretty much not the rest of the state. I mean, not that everybody will vote for the bill, but if they don't, it'll be because that reflects the will of their district.
You mean Republicans in Salt Lake County?
Republicans in Salt Lake County, but also, for example, the Summit County folks and, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, there will be people that will vote for it.
What's this thing going to look like, you think, eventually? I mean, is it going to resemble what was passed yesterday, the bill?
I think so. It's actually going back to the future. It's pretty close to the Spend Love bill last year, which was something philosophically we couldn't support. But the fact that it has circuit breakers for enrollment and for cost, and it doesn't bind the state in the out years. Because, yes, I know we're in a position of surplus right now, but even in the wonderful greatest economy ever in the history of the universe by Donald Trump, even in that economy, you can't repeal the law of economics. What goes up comes down. And there's also a technical reason why they can't just take that money and move it over to Medicaid, but nobody wants to hear that.
Dave Owen, consultant for the Foundation for Government Accountability at the Utah Legislature. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Doug.
We'll take another break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West. I'm KUER.
Hey, it's Julia Ritchie from KUER's State Politics Podcast, 45 Days. Every Friday, I get together with my fellow reporter, Nicole Nixon, to break down the latest news and bills from the Utah legislative session. If you live in Utah, this stuff will affect you. So subscribe on your favorite podcast app and sign up for our newsletter at 45days.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now to our conversation, talking about the effort of Utah lawmakers to roll back Proposition 3, some of the expansions made to Medicaid back in November. We've been sort of talking about both sides of this issue, the principle involved in subverting, some say, the will of the people. Joining us now on the program is Robert Gerke, news columnist for the Salt Lake Tribune. He's been writing about these ballot initiatives in general, this particular one in particular. Joining us back in the studio, and Robert Gerke, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I guess I wanted to begin with how unprecedented, you've been writing about this, and we've talked about this on the air before. I hadn't realized this in one of your articles. You mentioned only three initiatives passed in this state since 1960, and then we get a chunk this year.
Yeah, I mean, they've made it incredibly difficult to get an initiative on the ballot. And you talked earlier about all of the outside money that was coming into this. And part of that is because they've made it so difficult with the signature thresholds you have to get, all the hoops you have to jump through. And so there was just sort of this bottled up momentum, I guess, for these issues, the medical marijuana initiative, the Better Boundaries initiative, this Medicaid expansion initiative, and also you could argue the Count My Vote initiative that got knocked off the ballot at the last minute. But yeah, I mean, it's so difficult that, it's very rare that we have one, much less three. And now with the legislature coming back and looking to undo some of these, you kind of have to ask if it's actually a tool for the people at all anyway. So that's one of the issues that's
being
raised.
Do you think it is? I mean, you hear Dave Owens.
No, I don't.
You don't. So his contention is basically you have outside interests with these grand agendas.
Yeah.
They come in. It's not grassroots.
It's because you can't do it with grassroots anymore. I mean, 120, you have to realistically gather 180, 190,000 signatures so you don't get knocked off the ballot. They have to be from all across the state. And then you have to spend all of this money to do that. And then once you get it on the ballot, even if it passes, you know the legislature is going to come back and undo it or tinker with it next time. And so you have to really ask yourself if with these actions that are being taken by the legislature, why would anybody go through the cost and the time and the money and the effort to get an initiative on the ballot in the future?
So what does 53% tell you? What does that say to you? I mean, again, the question was this a mandate, or was this just a bunch of manipulated people?
No, I don't think it was a mandate, and I don't know that it was manipulated people either. 53% is not a convincing margin, but you have to realize we're Utah here. We're one of the reddest states in the country, one of the most conservative states in the country. We're also a very compassionate state. I mean, I think that's traditionally been our reputation. And so it's not terribly surprising that it went this way. And as Matthew mentioned earlier in the program, the polling had always indicated about 60% approval rating. Now, whenever you put a tax increase on the ballot, it ends up having a hard time at the ballot box. So I think 53% is not a surprising margin for it. If it was higher, maybe the legislature would be a little bit more reluctant to start tinkering with it, because then they would fear the wrath of the voters for messing with it. But 53 is not nearly enough to scare them off, I guess.
Here's what's interesting to me is, on one hand, you can say, as it seems like lawmakers did with Proposition 2, let's go in, fundamentally we'll accept the will of the people, at least that they want something. But it needs to be fixed.
Yeah.
But what Matt Sloniker is saying and others is that that's not what's going on right here, that there are some essential fixes, there are some economic problems, but essentially because they put in this repeal, expecting the waiver,
the trigger,
that they don't really they're not really trying to fix it. They just want to undermine it entirely.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to keep in mind that that waiver is the deal breaker in this whole thing. If they get the waiver, what they do would cover that 100% population, and it would be financially stable for years to come. The problem is that no other state's gotten that waiver, as Matt mentioned. The administration has balked at similar proposals out of Virginia for the 90-10 split, things like that.
Why?
And because it would be a deal. It would be a budget buster, really. I mean, if you figure Utah's about 1% of the U.S. population, right? Okay. And if you give it to Utah, that's fine. But then you've got 30 other states out there that have also expanded that would also want that same deal. And then you start getting into some real money, and you start jeopardizing the long-term stability of Medicaid generally. And you've also got to keep in mind that we've got an administration that's already making noise about trying to get control of the national debt. Mm-hmm. And so to then blow a hole in the Medicaid side of things that way, which is, I think, is unrealistic. You've also got a Utah legislature that prides itself on being fiscally conservative that's about to jump into this, you know, dive head first into this Medicaid thing. It's going to be about a $700 million commitment per year in federal funds. And they, you know, they're doing it on a wink and a nod. They don't even have anything in writing. And so that is something I've never seen before. I mean, they're committing, $100 million of taxpayer money to this thing without really having a commitment, anything firm past how they're going to pay for it after the first year. And that's why if the waiver doesn't come through, they're going to end up repealing this because they can't keep paying for it the way they are. Matt mentioned this, and I think it's an important point. You're with the proposal that's on the table now in SB 96, you're covering about two-thirds as many people for about twice the cost in state dollars. And so, you know, you've got to – they can't sustain that long term. There's no realistic reason that
without a waiver.
Without the waiver, and so it's all hinging on that.
But so you hear Dave Owens saying, with some confidence, expressing confidence, the Trump administration is inclined or would be inclined at some point to do that. You heard Paul Edwards, deputy chief of staff for the governor, talking about that they've had many conversations with the Trump administration, and they feel optimistic about all of that. What do you think?
Well, like I said, I've not been a party to those conversations. Right. I haven't seen anything in writing. Again, other states have asked for similar waiver treatment. They haven't got it. If they give it to Utah, they're going to have to give it to everybody else, though. And so that's where I think they run into some real problems with on the financial end from the federal level, just because you can't really cover the 60% of the population. You know, like I said, Utah's 1%. And when you start talking about two-thirds of the population that's going to be wanting this, then you're going to have a hard time making it balance out.
You've written about the fixes you like or you think are essential.
Yeah.
You talked about an inflation adjustment. You talked about some of the other things, the economic things that could be fixed here. One of the things also you mentioned was that hospitals should be paying for the expansion, that this so-called hospital assessment, because they're going to –
Yeah. Well, right now, hospitals have to treat anybody who comes into the emergency room. And so a lot of times they don't get paid for that if the people aren't insured, because the emergency room is always sort of the provider of last resort, right? So in the past, when Governor Herbert proposed Healthy Utah, when the legislature proposed its alternative to Healthy Utah, and even in Representative Spendlove's bill that Dave mentioned from last year, the hospitals were going to be paying part of the freight for that. It was originally, I think, $26 million in Herbert's bill. It's $15 million in Christensen's bill.
That's SB 96.
SB 96. Yeah. Representative Ray Ward has a bill that fixes basically just the hospital assessment and this inflation adjuster. And over, you know, that runs surpluses into as far as they can project right now, and actually builds up a reserve account of almost $200 million
So why aren't lawmakers favoring Ward's bill over Christensen's bill?
Because they don't want to cover that 100 to 138% population. Yeah. The argument for that is that those people, the 100 to 138% population, those individuals who make about $12,000 to $16,000
are able-bodied.
Are not even just able-bodied, but they're getting subsidies to buy to buy policies through the federal marketplace right now. And so, you know, if they say, well, those people are already getting coverage that they have to pay a little bit for, and, you know, so why should we move them off of private insurance onto the public insurance, onto Medicaid, and be saddled with that commitment long term?
One of the things you said is that I think you said voters, whatever happens, they're going to have to brace themselves for some kind of work requirement. You think that's just going to happen?
You know, I just think in this state it's unlikely that we'll see anything that doesn't include some sort of work requirement. And, you know, I'm kind of agnostic about that. I think a carefully tailored work requirement could not be you might not be onerous. You start exempting people who are disabled, people who are in treatment, people who are getting educations, people who are single parents, things like that, and really focus on those people who are able-bodied, because that is part of the population, able-bodied single adults, then maybe a work requirement could be helpful to try to, you know, try to keep this in balance.
How do you see this playing out right now? This whole two-thirds majority thing we've been talking a little bit about, it seems, I guess it's not all that complicated, but what are the politics involved in the way this is playing?
You know, right, I think they're more worried about the two-thirds majority so they can get immediate implementation of it. It takes effect immediately if they get two-thirds. I almost doubt that, you know, there would be a referendum to try to repeal this if it falls short of two-thirds, because, as we said before, you know, then the legislature just comes back. You're going to put in the time, the money, the effort, and then the legislature will come back and undo it.
So you just have to start all over
again. Yeah, it's a continual seesaw or tug of war that just doesn't end up getting resolved. So I think SB 96 is probably going to pass. I think that's where leadership is putting its weight. I think that's where the governor is putting his weight. And then we wait and see if this waiver comes through or not.
Let me ask you this finally, because this is something you've talked about. You said this is exactly what Healthy Utah did back in 2014. Yeah. And so you were sort of ruminating in one of your pieces that it's kind of a shame. I mean, 4 years later, lawmakers could have saved a lot of lives potentially, or certainly lots of federal tax dollars, if they just would have acted 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, and we're talking about billions of dollars in tax dollars that Utahns have sent to Washington, that Washington sent to other states. We're talking about, according to a Harvard study, hundreds of people who have died who didn't need to. And we've looked at other states. I mean, Dave talked about the other states that have seen overruns in their enrollment, but he didn't talk about the overruns in cost, because frankly, every study that's been done says that this pays for itself and then some. Frankly, Colorado had many more people than they expected, but it said there was a study recently out of Colorado that said it's been a net positive for the economy, dropped its rate of uninsured in half, and they've seen savings in other areas and has created 30,000 jobs. You know, so other states that have seen overruns in the enrollment, because that's one of the big talking points that the legislators keep coming back to, don't talk about the overruns and costs, because frankly, outside of maybe Washington, which Dave did mention, there really hasn't been overruns in the cost. And in fact, there have been savings in Michigan, in New Mexico, in Nevada, in Ohio. All of these governors, and in particular, you talk about Michigan, Ohio, and Nevada, they had Republican governors for a long time, and they were some of the most vocal people opposing any effort to repeal this.
Robert Gerke, news columnist for the Salt Lake Tribune. We'll stay on top of this, have you back, talk more about it.
Yeah, sure. Happy to do it.
Thanks very much for joining us. Radio West, a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark, direction from Roddy Nickpour. I'm Doug Fabrizio.